And we've got another fascinating couple hours for you. Daniel Estulin is our special guest. His work, Trans Evolution, he was with me some time ago as we talked about the true story of the Bilderberg Group. He's a darn good researcher. Now, this, of course, imagine for a moment cyborgs, artificial intelligence, bionic eyes, humans capable of doing things they never imagined 20 years ago. But is it all worth it? We're going to be back with Daniel in a moment. We'll talk about that. And don't forget our ongoing poll at coasttocoastam.com. Just click the highlight reel and then answer the poll. And the question is, would you consider becoming part machine in order to extend your life and vitality? And believe it or not, nearly 51% of the folks say absolutely not. Welcome back to Coast to Coast. Daniel Estulin with us here on Coast to Coast. And of course, you'll remember Daniel for his work, The True Story of the Bilderberg Group. He's an award-winning investigative journalist. He has given speeches at the European Parliament and the international monetary situation. He's also talked about the Bilderberg. And Daniel, did you end up going to see Fidel Castro? That was supposed to happen a few years ago.
I did. Good morning or good evening, George. Great to be back on your show. Hello to all the fans and all the listeners of this magnificent program. Yes, I did. That was back in August 2010, and it was quite a meeting. Castro had read my book, and in the meeting he told me that he didn't know anything about the Bilderberg Group, and he found out when someone had given him a copy of my book, and he read it, and he said, well, a lot of the things that I didn't quite understand, he didn't elaborate, but about the world politics, he said, now I understand.
Yeah, it is amazing, Daniel, at how he has survived all these others, Khrushchev, Kennedy. I mean, he just keeps going. He's like the Ever-Ready Bunny, isn't he?
Well, exactly. I mean, you think back to it. I mean, he was around when Khrushchev was around. He was around when Eisenhower was around. That's how old this guy is. But I don't know. Maybe he's part man, part machine, a transhuman Fidel Castro.
Yeah, he is.
Just keep putting him on the shelf and then bringing him out with everything to show to the world.
He is the cyborg. Why is it, I'm not going to dwell too much on Cuba, but why is it that, you know, we trade with communist China, they run over people in Tiananmen Square, yet Castro, you know, we won't do the Cuban cigars, we don't even trade with him anymore. Why is that? Is it because of the influence?
You know, Cuba, North Korea, all these other countries, they're closed markets, and, you know, capitalism needs open markets. They try to do the same thing in Russia back in the 1990s, and we saw the result of that. Overnight, literally 40% of Russians lost all their life savings, you know, in one generation, in one decade, not even a generation, between 1991, with the fall of the Soviet Union, and before the end of the decade, in 1999, Russia lost 15 million people. In other words, its population base went from 164 million people to 148, and that's an amazing drop. So if you're a capitalist country like the United States and you need open markets or to have them opened any way you can, obviously North Korea and Cuba's of this world are an enemy.
Well, there's no question about that. So what have you been doing? We're going to get into Trans Evolution in just a sec. What's new with you, Daniel?
A lot. We are very close to finishing my documentary on the Bilderberg Group. That should be coming out in the next 3-4 months or so. It's going to be a worldwide release. And Trans Evolution is out in the United States. It came out in Spain. It immediately went to number one. I have other books which have been published, you know, before coming out all over the world. France just published my book on the economy. So a lot is going on. And this book is going to be Trans Evolution is going to be quite an interesting subject, because I'm very surprised by the poll that more than half of the people, you know, would be willing to become transhuman. And I'm not judging. I'm just saying that it's very interesting, because the debate, you know, it's palpating. You can feel it in the air, not only on the coast to coast, but so many films are coming out, Hollywood production.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
The latest one, Transcendence with Johnny Depp, that's an amazing film. I can't wait to see that, because it talks exactly about the transhumanist vision of the future. You don't need to be human to be immortal. You just need to have your consciousness downloaded onto a computer.
That's right. Are you familiar with the Spanish actor Javier Bardem?
Well, Javier Bardem, yeah, of course.
You sound just like him, by the
way. I do?
Yes.
Actually, I prefer to sound like me. I know him quite well.
But that's a compliment for you.
A long line of Spanish actors.
Yeah, that's a compliment for you. Okay, so humanism. Explain what that is.
Well, you know, before I explain it, George, I'd like to set the scene, if I may.
All right.
You know, 6,000 years ago, if you think of knowledge, who controlled all the information and access to knowledge? Because we didn't have computers back then, as far as I know. Well, the high priests controlled all. Just think of it, pyramidal structures. They were at the top, and they fed us, you know, the rest of humanity, little bits and pieces of information, just enough for us to, you know, get by and do a menial job day to day. Now, today, 6,000 years later, this pyramidal structure has been, you know, reversed. It's upside down. Now, with a computer revolution, anybody, anywhere in the world, I don't care if you're, you know, a European, an American, or an Indian, Koya from Bolivia, sitting in the middle of the Amazon rainforest with a computer and an internet connection, you have access at your fingertips, sorry, to all the information that's been out there for thousands of years. And so for the elites, it's a terrible thing because they've lost that advantage they've always had. So what they're doing now, and I've discovered this through reading this very interesting report, which I'm sure we'll go into, the Strategic Trends Report, which was published at one of the by British government, but actually it comes from the Bilderberg meeting in 2005. And what they're talking about is that using technology is their way again to get the upper hand on us. And one of the conclusions that I come to in the book is that, you know, the generation of our children, you know, the kids who are 15, 16, 17, 20 years old, they're the last truly human generation of humans, of people on the planet. The next, their children and their children's children no longer will be human. They'll be transhuman. They'll be post-human. They'll be man-machines. They'll be cyborgs. They'll be beings who are not totally human. They'll be anything but human beings as we understand. And we, as people on the planet Earth, are standing on the cusp of the greatest change, you know, in the history of mankind. And it's going to hit us, you know, with such speed and force that people simply are unprepared what is coming. And again, I'm not talking about you're going to get a new Apple version of a computer or a smartphone. No, I'm talking a change that will affect everything around us. Humanity will never, ever be the same again. And that's coming in the next couple of years.
You know, we've got a poll going up at our website, and it's a pretty accurate poll. And 51% of the people would not want to become cyborgs to live longer. That's pretty interesting. 51, the majority.
You know, it's divided 50-50. And again, you know, it's what is transhumanism? Because people are now beginning to understand that there's such a terminology. It's fairly new in the mainstream transhumanist agenda. And the symbol for it is H plus, human plus, extra human, which is transhuman. Now, this transhumanism is this ultra high-tech dream of computer scientists, philosophers, neuroscientists, and many others. And what they seek is to use radical advances in technology to augment the human body, mind, and ultimately the entire human experience. The transhumanists wish to become what they call post-human, and a post-human is someone who has been modified with performance-enhancing body, performance-enhancing brain augmentations to the point that they can no longer call themselves human. When we talk about performance-enhancing, we always think about drugs. Well, no more. Performance-enhancing bodies. And these people, I call them people, quote-unquote, they will have mutated themselves into an altogether new being. And to most people, it sounds like, you know, some crazy science fiction film. And few people are aware of constant, incredible breakthroughs in technology, which makes the transhumanist vision very real over the next few years. You know, for example, neurochip interfaces, computer chips that connect directly to the brain are being developed right now. The ultimate goal of a brain chip will be to increase your intelligence thousands of times. Just imagine, you don't speak French, no problem. Let me just, you know, plant a chip in your head, and in 0.5 of a second, less than 1 second, you will have learned all of French history, and you will become the foremost French scholar in the world.
It sounds far-fetched, but it really isn't, Daniel. It's really possible.
Well, you know, the goal, when you really, really, really look at the transhumanist agenda, is, literally what Huxley called, Huxley's 20th version of the 21st century version of scientific dictatorship without tears. And these concepts, you know, such as transhumanism, you know, where did it come from? It came out of humanism, which is yet another clever disguise of scientism created specifically so that global eugenics operation could be carried out without being noticed. And that's what it's all about. They controlled the world, then they stopped controlling the world because we suddenly had access to all the same knowledge that they've had over thousands of years in their secret society meetings. We had it at our fingertips sitting, you know, under a tree in the middle of a rainforest because we had a computer and internet connection. And now using technology, incredible technology, which is very necessary for the betterment of humanity, but they're using it, you know, to break this divide even more between them, 0001%, and the rest of us, because this technological advancements which we're talking about cost gazillions of dollars. This isn't something that, you know, costs you a few million dollars. No, we're going to Mars in 4.5 years. Mars One, a Dutch corporation, manned mission to Mars. For God's sake, people are going to be living on Mars in the next 5 years, and they're never coming back.
They're not coming back.
That's what we're facing.
That's true. And in some form and fashion, I think we are a kind of crude cyborgs now. I mean, there are people walking around with artificial knees and artificial hips and, you know, artificial arteries and pipes in their body. There's all kinds of things. It's kind of crude from what it's going to be like in the future. But I think we have cyborgs now, don't we?
Well, we do have cyborgs. I mean, look at Oscar Pistorius, you know, the famous Blade Runner.
Yeah.
He became famous when he won the bronze medal, the first paralytic runner or athlete to win a medal at Olympic Games. He won a bronze medal, and he became infamous when he killed his girlfriend in South Africa, and he's going to be, I mean, on trial, I think, I don't know exactly when, but the point is that, of course, we do. And because of the magic of entertainment and the magic of brainwashing capabilities of the mass media, you know, they will convince us in the next 3 to 4 years that it's cool, you know, to have an artificial arm because it looks cool and shiny, and you're gonna have people walking down the street who are not gonna, you know, hide the fact that, you know, they have blades for legs. They're gonna want to show it, and others will want to take their perfectly normal body parts and substitute it with something else. Not because they need it, because obviously technological advancements allow people to live longer. People have heart problems, kidney, liver problems. But this is frivolous. But this is technology. Just, you know, go back in time. 100,000 BC, stone tools. 4,000 BC, the wheel. 9th century AD, gunpowder. Yeah. Then we had the printing press in the 15th century. That was a real game changer, just like as internet it is today. 19th century, the light bulb. 20th century, cars, television, nuclear weapons, spaceships, internet. Well, we're in the 21st century, and the things are coming at us faster.
Oh, my God.
Biotech, nanotech, fusion, space travel. In the next 50 years, we will be able to create cybernetic individuals who will be completely indistinguishable.
What about the next 500 years, Daniel? What the heck will this planet be like then?
I don't know. You know, one of the things about this new book, Transhumanism, you know, when people read Bilderberg, you know, they discover this secret organization or private that allegedly ruled the world, and they found out that these nameless and faceless people had faces and names and deeds and everything else that put to their, you know, to the crimes and everything else. But you had a kind of a neat conclusion. You know, we're trying to save the world from these bad people. But with this book, Transhumanism, you finish it, and there are more questions than answers. It's the future we're talking about. We can extrapolate what we know. We can understand based on, you know, on previous information what it's going to look like in the next 20 years from now. But to think 500 years into the future, well, one thing is for sure. We're not going to be living on the planet Earth. That's guaranteed. We're going to, you know, this is our calling. And not because there's a lot of people say, oh, you've polluted this Earth. Now you want to do the same with other planets. No, it's not about that. It's the fact that we as people have this divine spark of reason that makes us so different from any other animal on the planet, and it allows us to discover universal principles of nature which improve the lives of everybody on the planet. And these discoveries are all around us, and what we want to do, and it's our calling as people, is to conquer space. You know, when I was with Castro, I said to him, Comandante, what does immortality mean to you? And he kind of talked about, you know, Marx and Engels and Lenin and all these other characters.
Yeah.
And then he kind of said, you know, well, what does it mean to you? And I said, you know, a lot of people talk about, you know, you crossing yourself and when you die, your soul goes to heaven. And I don't know. You know, nobody ever came back and said that's the case. But what I do know is that immortality to me means the survival of the human species. And for us to survive, because Earth is a small planet with limited natural resources and never growing population base. And one of the things I talk about in this new book is I break down the financial crisis as a necessary part to explain to people why, you know, the elites strive for technological advances so that they, more than anything else, can get the heck out of here. You know, they need this technological advancement to go live somewhere else. Because, again, they're destroying the economy of the world because progress and development is directly proportional to population density. So there's progress. If there's development, there's going to be more people on the planet Earth. And the Rockefellers of this world, they don't need more of us.
Well, that's what I want to ask you, because you covered this, you know, with your book on the Bilderberg Group and now Transevolution here. What about the folks that don't have the kind of money to become cyborgs, to exist, to get those body parts? Is this going to be the rich versus the poor?
Unfortunately, George, it always is the rich versus the poor. It's just the divide is going to be so much greater. And it's going to be so much greater, not because I think so, I extrapolate what I know into the future, but because, you know, I decided to write this book, which is, you know, how did this book come around, about. I came across in 2005 at the Bilderberg Conference in Rottenhagen in Germany, where I was there with Jim Tucker, God bless his soul. We were actually the only two journalists there covering that conference. And out of that conference, my sources at the Bilderberg Conference told me about this fascinating and terrifying, you know, discussion which they had about the future of humanity. And they talked to me about this strategic trends report, and they gave me the report, you know, parts of it, not all of it. And I read it. And I realized that the secret source document on the future of humanity, as they called it, that I was reading, wasn't about the future at all. It was about the present. And now this report, if people are interested, you can get it online for free. Just type in Strategic Trends Report 2007-2036, and you can read it online. It's a 91-page document, and you will be terrified at what these people are talking about. You know, for example, they're saying that in one generation, the population of the world will go to 10 billion people. They're also saying that the growing gap between the majority and a small number of highly visible super rich is likely to pose an increasing threat to social order and stability. And the result, according to this report, of the growing desperation on the part of humanity, it means you and I, will result in a civil war, intercommunal violence, insurgency, pervasive criminality, widespread disorder, and flash mobs. We didn't know what flash mobs were back in 2005. We sure the heck do now.
Look
at Kiev. Yeah. Look at Turkey. One minute nothing is happening. The next minute they're burning the whole city down. And then, you know, to top it all off, they're saying that the nation states, countries in other words, they will collapse and they will become replaced by mega cities. And the definition of a megacity is a population base of over 20 to 30 million people. And then they say, caused by this massive population displacement, cities will swell to unimaginable proportions, which will already have experienced endemic lawlessness and high level of violence. And then in 2035, the megacities themselves will collapse, you know, bringing chaos to the entire planet. So if you're the elite, is this where you want to live? No.
No.
You want to get the heck out of here. And that's why this technological divide. I mean, look at this film, Elysium. We just saw it in the summer. When I saw that film, I had goosebumps over my body because I said to myself, my God, this is exactly what the report was talking about.
That's right.
Them living this artificial planet or whatever you want to call it up there, and the rest of us dying of hunger, disease, lawlessness on the planet Earth.
Hold on for a second, Daniel. We're going to hit the break. We're going to come back, talk more with you. And, of course, next hour we'll take phone calls as we talk about Transevolution, the age of human destruction. All right, next hour we'll take your phone calls with Daniel Estulin as we talk about Transevolution, cyborgs, all the incredible things that are happening with technology. But is it all good? Well, let's find out when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back, Daniel. How many people would, you know, besides my poll here, were a little more than 50% say no. How many people do you think, faced with the possibility of extending their life, would indeed take that possibility?
I think right now it's probably 50-50. In the future, I think it's going to be a lot more, because the elite will certainly go out of their way to make everyone understand that it's their best interest to have microchips implanted into their brain and to become hooked up to this, you know, giant cloud, which we already have, and which will be called hive mind. And that's going to be the future. And needless to say, through mass media, through entertainment.
Sign of the beast, huh?
I'm sorry?
It'll be the sign of the beast.
You know, people talk about the microchip in your hand. We don't need that anymore. We have a cell phone that, you know, we have hooked up to our bodies 24/7. So we don't need to even worry about it anymore. We have everything that we need, you know, with the technology today. You don't need a microchip in your hand. We have telephones, smartphones, and they do everything that we possibly could have and want from the elite's point of view.
The population, as you talked about, as it rumbles past 7 billion into 8, 9, and 10, the elitists, though, Daniel, they don't want the population that high, do they?
They certainly don't, not on the planet Earth, needless to say, because, again, the point of what we're witnessing right now, the demand destruction and the economic downturn, and it is specifically to reduce the world's population base, because progress and development is directly proportional to population density. If we have progress, we have development, we have new technologies to support the 7 billion people on planet Earth, then we're going to have a population explosion, as we've had, for example, in the 15th century in France with Louis XI in the 1460s. In one generation, France went, doubled their population. And if you're the Rockefellers of this world, or the Rothschilds of the elite, of the 0.01%, you need the population reduced to a more manageable number, because they just need enough people to work the planet for the rest of them. If you have 7 billion people and you have lowering food base and lack of water, what you're going to have is Rockefellers are not going to have enough food and water, and needless to say, that's something that they can't afford.
Well, there's no question about that. You talk a lot about Nazi Germany in your work, Trans Evolution. How come?
Because you see a lot of comparisons, especially in the way that the elite then understood the world, and the way that the elite today understand the workings of the mind. Also, a lot of the characters that we had, came out of the Nazi Germany, which basically was a cult. It wasn't even an army. You have the same kind of characters lurking behind these organizations today, and the people, for example, who are still around, such as the Rockefellers, and they come out of this movement, and the J.P. Morgans, when I talk about the financial destruction. They're the same characters who 100 years ago or 90 years ago did a lot to make sure that the Nazis became, you know, the war machine that they were.
Would you put GMO foods and things like that into this same category of this trans evolution?
You know, food is a very interesting subject. Again, it's one of the chapters in my book. There's no better or cheaper way to reduce population than through starvation. And in order to starve people to death, you must take control of their food production away from independent farmers and put it into the hands of giant corporations subservient to the interests of World Company Limited. And, you know, the whole thing about using food as a weapon, it's a very ancient practice. It wasn't born with Monsanto. And, you know, you can go back 4,000 years to Mesopotamia, you know, ancient Greece, the cults of Apollo, Demeter, and others. They often controlled the shipping of grain and other foodstuffs through a temple system. And one of the things that I didn't know, and I came as somewhat of a surprise, is just to what extent a very small number of companies, half a dozen companies, literally run the entire world's food supply.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You're talking about Cargill, Continental, Louis Dreyfus, Bungeon, Born, Andre, and Archer Daniel Midland. They have complete dominance over everything in the world as far as food supply is concerned. And so needless to say, you're looking at this virtual spider web of financial, political, economic, and industry interests, you know, with this Venetian ultramontane Fondi system at the center, and these interlocked corporations decide who lives and who dies. And as far as, it's very interesting that you brought up GMO, because with synthetic biology, they're literally changing our DNA using genetically modified crop, which is, again, one of the reasons why future generations are not going to be people, human beings, but something else. And then what I discovered when I started looking at how genetically modified organisms fit into this whole transhumanist agenda in my book, Transevolution. And then I realized that the whole thing actually started with the Rockefellers and the Green Revolution. And the Green Revolution was, it initially purported to save 1 billion people from starvation in Mexico and Latin America and India and so on and so forth during the 50s and the 60s. And basically, as it emerged years later, the Green Revolution was a brilliant Rockefeller family scheme to develop a globalized agribusiness, which they then could monopolize just as they had done with the world's oil industry, beginning half a century earlier. And it's a crucial aspect of the interest of Rockefeller Foundation and these corporations and U.S. agribusiness companies was the fact that the Green Revolution was based on proliferation of new hybrid seeds in developing markets. And this handful of companies held the patents on them and used them to lay the groundwork for what later became the GMO revolution. And that's one of the reasons why we have what we have today. And again, the logic behind the whole transhumanist movement and the GMO seeds is that using synthetic biology, they're literally changing our DNA. And that's something which we've never had before. Just think about it. In the 19th century, we had a revolution of harnessing energy from fossil fuels. And the 20th century was about exploiting the power of data. Well, the 21st century is about controlling biology. We can literally create today beings which are made in a laboratory. Now, how's that for technological advancement?
When you were putting together Transevolution, was there a subject matter that you said, nah, that can't be, but it was?
One of the things about this book is that I needed to come to it with a very open mind, because if I kind of locked myself into a mode or model, I would never be able to write it. One of the things I discovered is just how far along a lot of these things that, these people were up to are. There's a movement called Russia 2045. And one of the, faces of this movement is a guy by the name of Ray Kurzweil, who is the computer. He's the genius behind, Google Technologies. And when you have Google and Kurzweil combined, you're looking at, the futuresque monster. And what basically this movement is talking about, and I certainly, when I started reading and looking into the data, I said to myself, my God, these people are really so far along that most of us don't even know that this stuff exists. For example, world science by 2035, that's in less than 20 years, comes very close to understanding the principles of consciousness. The scientists, I'm not talking about some mad scientist, I'm talking about Nobel Prize-winning scientists, people who are world famous and renowned for their discovery.
Leaders, the best of the best.
Exactly. They're convinced that by 2035, the first successful attempt to transfer one's personality to an alternative carrier will take place. They're calling this the epoch of cybernetic immortality. Literally, they think that in one generation, bodies made of nanorobots will take shape or rise alongside hologram bodies. And by 2045, that is in one generation, we will see drastic changes in social structure. They're talking about the dawn of a new era, the era of neo-humanity. And basically what these scientists want to do is incrementally move the human mind into a more, disembodied and futuristic vehicles. Vehicles, not people, vehicles. First, yeah. A humanoid robot controlled entirely by a human brain via brain-machine interfaces. Human brain.
With your conscious memory, right?
Exactly. Then this conscious brain transplanted into a humanoid robot. Then consciousness itself uploaded to a computer, and finally a hologram that contains the full conscious human mind. Now, this may seem futuristic, but according to this mega project, Russia 25, again, go online and see it for yourself. They intend to create a new vector for civilization aimed at future human development and evolution by integrating new discoveries and new developments from science, from physics, energetics, aeronautics, bioengineering, nanotechnology, neurology, cybernetics, cognitive sciences, into this transhumanist agenda.
Isn't it possible that one day they'll clone a body of you, but then they'll be able to download your brain and put it into this new cloned body? In essence, you live forever.
Well, that's the whole thing. This is exactly what they're after. And the point is that for us, when we talk about immortality, we still think flesh and blood. We still think our body the way it is, maybe older, but we still think of films like Highlander or Wolverine, where these people live for centuries. Well, it's not like that for them. These people understand that for them, the human, you know, the vehicle itself, as they call it, is irrelevant what you look like physically. It's your consciousness that they want to make sure that lives forever. And the idea that if you can download it onto the internet, onto the computer, I mean, exactly as in this film Transcendence, which is coming out, I think, in March with Johnny Depp. And when I saw the trailer for it, I said to myself, this is incredible.
This is your stuff. Here it is, and it's coming faster and faster and faster. How often does it increase in speed?
You know, it's in the last 50 years, George, we've learned more than in the entire history of mankind.
Yeah.
And the next 20, we will have learned more than in the last 50, which was more than the entire history of mankind. And in the following 12, we'll have learned more than in the first 20, than in the last 50, and then all the history of mankind. And it's going to come a point in about two generations where everything we will have learned in the history of mankind will be doubling every single year. And this is absolutely amazing when you think about it. But again, a lot of people are afraid of technology. It's the kind of stuff that we're talking about. People say, well, this is awful. We can't afford it. We can't permit it. You know, we're losing ourselves as people. No, technology is an amazing thing. When we have so many people on a planet Earth, we need technological advancement and development to be able to use that technological base to make lives better for people on the planet Earth. But the point is, it depends how you use it. You know, for example, you can have a doctor who's sitting in his office in Los Angeles, world-famous surgeon, and he's operating on a little girl who is dying of brain cancer in the Philippines. That's a marvelous thing. We would never been able to have done that, you know, just a few years ago. But using almost the same technology, George, almost the same technology, you have a four-star general sitting at the Pentagon who orders a drone strike and kills 100 people by mistake at a wedding in Philippines and Pakistan. So it all depends on how this technology is being used and for what purposes.
Is it out of control right now, Daniel?
No. It's not out of control at all. Being out of control means that no one is controlling the technology itself. It's run away, and it's not run away. It's being controlled by the people who run the world from behind the scenes, which is one of the reasons, as I said to you before, one of the premises in this book is that to create this divide between 0.01% and the rest of us, you need to invest quadrillions of dollars, because it's so expensive to do what these people are talking about. Just think about it. You know, you're being uploaded into a computer. You could live forever within a computer-generated reality, leaving your physical body behind. You know, in this machine, the individual could then merge his intelligence with the collective intelligence of all the other people in the digital reality, effectively becoming one super intelligent being. And this concept is called hive mind. You know, how much money does it cost to create this? Or people say, well, it will never happen. Well, it already happens today. They're training us to accept it, only it's called cloud, where it's fast and easy to upload everything we have in our files, okay, to a thing called cloud. Well, Hive Mind is exactly the same thing. The only difference, we're talking about people. And this is one of the grand visions of this movement, is to be able to upload human mind into holographic bodies, three-dimensional holograms, blurring reality and virtual reality by projecting images. You know, we'll blue beam or barium or strontium, whatever you want to call it, you know, turning our beloved blue sky into this giant mind-numbing television set.
I bet this can't happen fast enough for them, Daniel, because some of them are getting up there in age. They're running out of time.
Well, you know, it's one of the things about these people is, you know, they work unlike us, who don't really know what we're going to do this coming weekend other than watch the Super Bowl. You know, they work in 100-year cycles. If you go back to some of the letters that have, you know, been made public between Pike and Mazzini, you know, back in the 1870s, they were talking about Second World War. That's 1945. That's like 70 years later. You know what I mean? So the point is that these people work in 100-year cycles, and it doesn't matter if David Rockefeller lives or he dies. The people who really run the world are unknown to us, and that's one of the things that I think is important for people to understand. When I talk of Rockefellers and the Rothschilds, these are the names that we know, the Buffets of this world and so on and so forth. They're nobodies. Well, really, they're nobodies. And I don't mean that, you know, to try to spite people. The fact that you can type Rockefeller's name into a Google search engine and get 150 million hits, you know, all it means is just his name is popular, but the really, really, really powerful people are invisible. And I discovered this, you know, that was one of the biggest shocks to me, because when I started this Bilderberg research 20 years ago, I thought, okay, the Rockefellers, you know, the top of the pyramid. We don't know what the top of the pyramid is because we don't know who these people are. They're invisible. I spent 3 years in the National Library in Florence, and I uncovered a name which I didn't know existed. It's called the Frescobaldis. And when I started looking at the 14th and the 15th century notary books of purchases made by these people, you know, land bought and sold, and I started adding it all up, I said to myself, wait a minute. These people I've never even heard of control 80% of Italian land. Who are they?
Good question. Who are they? And what do they want?
Well, I think what they want is the same thing that, you know, the rest of us would like to have, but we just can't. Immortality. And that's, you know, the film Prometheus, again, going back to Hollywood. And Hollywood is a great barometer because who controls Hollywood? It's not run by some, you know, nice little board of directors who want to entertain us. It's run by predatory companies, billionaires, who form part of this, you know, New World Order, One World Company compendium. And needless to say, what you see in these films is the present of the future. They're just getting you used to it. That's why there's such an influx of all these films. I'm not talking about Driving Miss Daisy. I'm talking about technology. You know, G.I. Joe. Look at G.I. Joe, G.I. Joe 2. They're talking about the technology nanobots, which already exists today, and it's full of it. Prototype. They're talking about Singularity Movement. Elysium. This latest film, Transcendence, is coming out right now. Well, Minority Report. You know, all the technology there, it already exists today. You know, Men in Black, you know, the technology in that film also exists today.
That's right.
Amnesia Beam, they have it already. It's not science fiction.
And they'll use it. And they are using it, aren't they?
Well, the whole point of this stuff, and this is something that people have to understand, that this technology is not being developed to stop the terrorists, but rather to stop you and me. And the laws to justify these technologies are not written on a whim. They're specifically designed to give the government carte blanche authority over the people during this chaos and confusion of what they call the age of transition, the age of transition to planetary civilization. You see, the future Bin Ladens and the Gaddafis of this world, they're not the enemy. They never were the enemy. You, George, and me, we are the enemy. Whether the airports, the border crossings, street corners, from now on, we'll be mind-probed by this amazing new technology being developed by the Human Factors Division of the Department of Homeland Security Science and Technology Directorate, and it's all around us. We see it. It's there. And the whole thing, again, please understand, these are not publicly funded projects for the betterment of humanity, but they're mostly secret experiments sanctioned in the name of defense, which when you put it on its head, is crime prevention and extrapolated into the future, is tailor-made to put down any rebellion by the 99% of the world's population destined to live in abject poverty and crime-infested megacities of the future. Or do you think the Rockefellers want a repeat of Kiev in their backyard?
We shall be back with questions and calls next.